You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Politicians and the industries that support them have too often worked to cast doubt on science that runs counter to their goals. But in recent years, politicians have shifted from casting doubt to simply calling science they don't like a hoax. Scientists and academics often don't want to get involved in the world of brawling politics, and who blames them? But an article published by The Conversation asks this question: when politicians cherry-pick data and disregard facts, what should academics do about it? The author of that piece is Andrew Hoffman of the University of Michigan. He teaches at the Ross School of Business and the School of Natural Resources and Environment. You write, "In an age of fake news and alternative facts, we need to step into the breach and inject scientific literacy into the political discourse. Your stage, your media reach, is not that of the politicians, the free market think tanks, and the lobbyist money that support their efforts. So how can scientists and academics actually make a difference?"
Well, I think that this is consistent with what I've been pushing, and many are pushing now, for academics to get more involved in public and political discourse. And to my sense, the stakes just continue to get raised as science is used as a weapon, selectively chosen, cherry-picked, to make arguments that are often just flat-out wrong.
An example of that you cited is President Trump explaining his reasoning for wanting the U.S. to withdraw from the Paris Agreement on climate change. He cited a number of statistics about the agreement causing millions of lost jobs, severely damaging industries such as paper manufacturing, cement, iron and steel, natural gas, and killing the coal mining industry. What are your concerns about those facts that he cited?
Well, he drew them all from one study that was done by a consulting firm. The firm is called NERA. And in fact, NERA has posted a press release saying that data was misused. They never intended to do a cost-benefit analysis of the Paris Agreement. It wasn't done for the Trump administration. It was done before Trump came into office. And they did five scenarios, and the Trump administration chose one. And so they had to come out and say, wait a minute, that was a total misuse of our data.
But isn't this just political spin? That's been going on forever.
Right. But I think that it's incumbent upon academics and scientists to start to play a stronger role in informing the public discourse. And, you know, it's coming to our doorstep. This is manifesting itself in cuts in funding at the state level. Take a look at Wisconsin, North Carolina. They profess to not see a value in what universities provide. And it's happening at the federal level, the cuts in Trump's budget to the National Institutes of Health. They went $32 billion down to $26 billion. And that's actually had Mark Schlissel have to step forward and say, hey, wait a minute, this is going to hurt the University of Michigan. So I think it's time for us to start to step in and play a role in the discourse.
You noted something in this article that I wasn't aware of. The corporate world and its supporters apparently are not satisfied with influencing the electorate anymore. They're also targeting school children. Yeah. You note that the Libertarian Heartland Institute sent their book, Why Scientists Disagree About Climate Change, to grade school and high school science teachers. What's that mean for the future of public and fact-based science?
Yeah. I would condition one thing you said. I wouldn't necessarily equate the Heartland Institute with an industry group, although they do have some corporate funding. But it does represent just the brazen presentation of alternative facts and attempts to distort the conversation. And so, you know, you can talk to many scientists, the American Chemical Society. I go to meetings and they're apoplectic that a think tank would do this and try and change K through 12 education in such a means. So it's almost like the gauntlet's been thrown, and we can stay on the sidelines for any number of reasons. You know, we're not supposed to get political. I just don't buy that. I think that academics, scientists need to get political. And when people say that our research isn't political, anytime research leads to a conclusion that challenges the way people think or behave, it is by definition political. Face it. Deal with it.
So what are scientists doing in reacting to this?
Well, it's fascinating. Some are choosing to run for office, and my hat's off to them. It's a totally different environment, and you need a thick skin to do it. But the point of fact is only 19 of our 435 representatives have PhDs. Only 3 of our 100 senators have PhDs. So I think that our legislative bodies could benefit from more people who deeply understand science and the scientific process.
You make several points about responding when science credibility is challenged and how it's challenged. Let's go through them quickly. Number one, scientists have no place in political debates.
Some people say that. We shouldn't get sullied But anytime research impacts people's beliefs or their behavior, it is by definition political. And I think we have to own that and deal with it.
Mistakes are made in scientific research, so scientists should not be trusted.
Sure, that's an argument that's often used. Look at this one mistake in this entire model, throw out the entire model, and that's nonsense. Science corrects. We have retractions. We have peer review. Mistakes are going to be made, but that doesn't mean throw out the entire endeavor.
Scientists are arrogant. They don't want to listen to common sense or practical politics.
There's no question some scientists are arrogant. Anyone who's given an academic seminar knows that's true. But I would caution people to note the difference between arrogance and having a solid, evidence-based opinion and presenting it. It's a matter of tone.
All professors and the universities for which they work are liberal.
That's true. Surveys show that—
Now, I know some conservative professors.
There are some, yeah. Yes. It's not 100%. But liberals do outnumber conservatives on college campuses. Surveys show that to be true. But we also have something called peer review, which is designed to take bias out of this work. I like to point out that the fact is most farmers and ranchers, for that matter, are conservative. That doesn't mean my vegetables and meat are themselves conservative. So we have processes to take the bias out.
And the final one is, you know, especially when it comes to dealing with climate change, you people can't be serious, you scientists. After all, you use fossil fuels yourself.
And that is true as well. I think that we have an obligation, those of us who understand the issues around climate change, to be authentic and try and reduce our carbon footprint. But solutions to climate change require broad level scale. Change shifts in our systems and our culture. And we can't do that by moving into a cave and wearing a hair shirt. We have to be part of society.
So bottom line here for us, I mean, what's the big deal if politicians and industry distort scientific reports? I mean, they did that with cigarettes and the truth eventually came out. So what are you worried about?
I think that the scale of the issue is raised. Social media allows people to live in their bubbles and consume whatever information they want. And I think that academia needs to recognize this new context, this new landscape, and start to think about how we present information that goes beyond simply the academic journals. We need to be involved in the places where people get their information.
Andrew Hoffman is a professor at the University of Michigan. Again, his article is titled, When Politicians Cherry-Pick Data and Disregard Facts, What Should Academics Do? You can find it at theconversation.com. Good to talk with you again.
Oh, good to talk to you, Lester.